Human with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi, I'm Sabine.
And I'm Adam. Welcome to the 12th episode of Robots. In this show, we'll be looking into android science with Professor Hiroshi Ishiguro, director of the Intelligent Robotics Laboratory at Osaka University in Japan. Over the years, he's been looking into human-robot interactions and the philosophy of human presence. His tools, android robots, which are physical replicates of existing people, such as his daughter and even himself.
So what do you think? Will future robots be indistinguishable from humans? We'll be holding a poll on our forum to get your feedback on what android robots hold for the future. But first, let's hear the news from Christine.
Thanks, Sabine. The University of Tokyo and Toyota Motor Corporation have joined forces to develop a robot to reduce the burden of housework. In a demonstration for the media last week, a prototype was able to put away dishes, clean up rooms, and even dump clothes in the washing machine. The humanoid robot stands 155 centimeters tall, weighs in at around 130 kilograms, and moves around on wheels. The project aims for a robot that can enter mass production within the next 10 years and a retail price of around 8,000 euros or 10,000 US dollars. Australia's Defence Department has unveiled a new robot to support its troops. Spiker is a remotely controlled, tracked robot to counter improvised explosive devices. Similar in appearance to the Talon robots produced by Foster Miller and successfully deployed in Iraq, the Spiker uses tracks to move around and climb up stairs. It can be equipped with a range of instruments to investigate and detonate IEDs. Each robot is likely to cost about 12,000 euros or 15,000 US dollars, which is, as Roland Piquepaille points out on his blog, about a tenth of the cost of existing robots able to do a similar job. Finally, Carnegie Mellon University's Field Robotics Center has just celebrated its 25th birthday. Congratulations! CMU organized a symposium with a wide range of robot experts giving talks. For a slideshow of the Field Robotics' past 25 years' coolest robots, as well as videos of most of the symposium talks, have a look at our forum at www.robotspodcast.com/forum. As always, there is also more information on other robots, including on what may be your future robot housemaid and on Australia's anti-IED robot.
Thanks, Christine. If you've ever seen an android robot in the news, you've probably seen the ones coming out of the Intelligent Robotics Lab in Japan, directed by Professor Hiroshi Ishiguro. His androids are modeled after existing people and are able to closely mimic the appearance and reflexes of humans. Whether autonomous or teleoperated, his robots have been used to test human-robot interactions and even replace Ishiguro himself to give interviews and lectures. However, there is a theory by Masahiro Mori called the Uncanny Valley, which says that robots which look and act almost like humans, but not quite, cause a response of revulsion among human observers. One question, then, is to figure out whether Ishiguro's robots have passed this valley to reach the likings of humans. Hi, Hiroshi. Welcome to Robotsum.
Hello.
As a first question, I would like to ask if I'm speaking to the real Hiroshi Ishiguro or his Geminoid.
Well, unfortunately, you know, this is the real Hiroshi, Hiroshi Ishiguro, but in the near future, I hope I can replace with the android.
Over the past years, you've been often cited in the news and recognized for your work on android robots. What is your motivation for making robots which physically resemble humans?
Basically, what I want to study is the human-robot interactions. You know, so I want to know the what kind of robot is good for the human, and you know, the what is elemental factors in the human-robot interactions. So actually, the Android is a test bed for studying the that kind of you know, research issues. That is the my motivation, and therefore, you know, originally I have the Actually, 10 years ago, I started the project for the human-robot interaction, and I developed a humanoid robot. But the big question was, you know, what is the idea, the appearance for the robot? You know, this question is quite difficult, and nobody thought about this. Therefore, you know, I decided to build the Android. And after that, I have compared the Android and the humanoid, and still, you know, we are studying many things by using the Android.
So maybe what do you describe as Android science?
Yeah. So I call this framework Android science. You know, we have two types of approach for understanding what is human. So the standard approach is you know, maybe it's psychology and the cognitive science and the brain science, you know. But the approach, I think, robotics. So by building a robot, I believe we can understand what is the humans. You know, in Android science, so, the purpose for as engineering is quite simple. You know, we just build a more human-like robot. But difficulty is we don't have enough knowledge about the humans. Therefore, you know, initially, we develop a robot based on the knowledge from cognitive science and brain science. But after building a robot, the robot can be used as a test bed for the brain science or cognitive science, and then you know they will get the new knowledge. So in Android science, we are thinking that kind of cross interdisciplinary research approaches, and we hope to understand human more by collaborating with each other.
And why do you think making these robots very human-like will help in understanding these interactions with humans?
It is not so easy to compare the robot and to study the human likeness of a robot. The human has many factors, and robot also. For example, the behaviors and appearance and perceptions. You know, if we want to compare the robot and the humans, we need to check individual factors. But if we use the mechanical looking robot, it is not so easy, right? But if we use the Android, we can precisely compare the normal mechanical looking robot and Android and the humans. So, you know, and suppose we want to compare the behaviors, but we don't know why that behavior is good, because the robot has a different appearance from a human. But if we use the Android, so we can compare the Android and the humans more precisely. So that is the one approach in Android science. And then we can identify each factors, important factors for human-robot interaction.
Let's start by tackling the problem of appearance in androids. What are the androids you've created, and who are they modeled on?
And the first model was, well, I have developed three androids so far. The first model was my daughter's, because I wanted to compare with the mechanical-looking robot I have developed. And that robot has my daughter and the first the interactive robot developed by me, they were the same height. Therefore, I decided to make my daughter's Android, but unfortunately, the Android that Android was not so good because we couldn't install the enough number of actuators. Therefore, I have decided to build the female Android. You know, it's adult Android. At the time, the master was a newscaster. So there are many reasons why I have selected the female newscaster for the Android. But I developed the my copy with the teleoperated functions. So that is the story.
Can you maybe pick one of these Androids and tell us what sensors, actuators, and materials are used?
Yeah, well, maybe the female Android. Actually, the female Android and the my Android, they are using the same actuators. The actuator is a pneumatic actuator. It's an air piston. You know, basically, we cannot use the DC turbo motors with gears because it makes a very strange noise as a human. And the another point is, that is not flexible for external force. You know, when we push the Android need to receive that kind of need to have some natural reaction as a human. Therefore, we are using pneumatic actuators. But the demerit is pneumatic actuator is a very it's a kind of artificial muscle. But the demerit is that we need to have a big air compressors. So right now I'm developing the better linear actuators, we need to have one more year to build a robot with linear actuators, electric linear actuators.
And in terms of sensors?
My design policy is for human-like android, we need to have a human-like perception. But unfortunately, the computer is quite different from a human brain. Therefore, even if a robot has eyes and, the ears, and that means the cameras and the microphones, or the computer is so weak and we cannot have human-like perceptions. So my strategy is to use many cameras and many microphones and sensors, surrounding the Android. So therefore, the Android system has many cameras, camera network and the microphone network and the floor sensor network. But the tactile sensors, skin sensor, we put the skin sensors on the body. So, and then we can have a very human-like, perceptions for the Android.
You started talking about skin. What type of materials do you use for these robots?
When I started the Android project, most important things was human-like skin. That is the major difference with the traditional, the mechanical-looking robot. My idea was to use the silicone as a material and the piezo film. And so by using silicone and the piezos, we could develop a very sensitive human-like skin.
I've seen videos of your robots, and they really do look very human-like. What do you think is the most important aspect to make them look human-like?
Well, appearance, the shape is important, of course. But the second point is how to make a natural human-like expression. Even if we put many actuators under the face, it's quite difficult to control that. And the body movement is also important. And when we are sitting, the human never stop. What I want to mean is, we have a subconscious small movement. Right? That is the human. So difficulty is how to generate that kind of human-like subconscious movement. So still we are improving, but by implementing a small movement, the Android will be very, very human-like.
The second thing I wanted to talk about is behavior or cognition. How are your androids controlled? How do they use their sensors to do something intelligent?
Well, when we exhibited a female android in a World Expo Aichi, we used many sensors for recognizing visitors' behaviors. So, and as I said, that is, we are using a sensor network. So first, the floor sensor detects the position of the visitors, and then the camera network focus on the visitors and observe the visitors' behavior from various viewing angle. And then the computer, well, you know, they recognize the human behaviors by matching the stored data.
And then how was this female android able to interact with the people at the exhibit?
Actually it depends on the scenario, but, you know, we have prepared a very simple scenario. And as I said, the android master is a newscaster. Therefore, you know, in a World Expo, android behaved as reporters of the World Expo, and you know, the interaction was very simple. You know, android said just hello and asked some preference and guide the visitor to the next exhibit, something like that.
And how do humans react to these androids?
Almost all visitors follow the scenarios, and because because of the atmospheres and because of that situation. Our observation is basically the people were surprised very much about the quality of the android. You know, some of them, they ask to the android, why is a robot, right? And it was quite strange, but, if we carefully choose the situation and the purpose, the android will be very, very human-like.
I know that you've done comparisons between how people react, for example, to a child android, such as the one modeled after your daughter, or an adult android. Mm-hmm. What have you noticed?
When I have developed a child android, as I said, we couldn't install the enough number of actuators for the small body. And therefore, the android movement was very jerky. And it was very uncanny, and especially for the young children. They scared very, very much. So this problem is well known as the uncanny valley. My daughter's android, there was in the bottom of uncanny valley. And therefore, I decided to build the female android with more human-like mechanism and human-like behaviors. And when I developed a female android, you know, that we could have a good balance between a human-like appearance and the human-like movement. Therefore, you know, android was not uncanny anymore.
So you think she passed the uncanny valley?
The uncanny valley is a very conceptual graph, and that is not so precise. But I believe we could pass the biggest uncanny valleys. But still, we have small uncannies, many, many small uncanny valleys.
I'm quite fascinated by the idea of the Geminoid, which exactly resembles you and can mimic your gestures and speech. First of all, why do you need to teleoperate your Geminoid?
The limitation of robot technology is in computers. Computer is quite different from a human brain. Therefore, android cannot talk like real humans a long time. I mean, you know, even if we want to talk 1 hour and 2 hours, it's impossible. You know, we need to give a very short, fixed scenario for the interactions. Therefore, I developed a teleoperated android. So the teleoperated android is not, it's a hybrid system. It's a mixture of autonomous functions and interoperated functions. So therefore, we have developed the various technologies when we developed the with the female Android, but and therefore we can use that kind of technology for the Geminoid too, right? And the for example, the Geminoid has Geminoid has an automated function for generating a small human-like movement. And the, if we want, Geminoid can react to the simple questions of the visitors. But, when the visitor asks different questions, then we need help by operators. So that is why I needed to develop a teleoperated Android.
And do people interacting with the Geminoid feel like they are interacting with you directly?
I think so. Of course, the people easily can find that is not human. But, by talking with the Geminoid system, the both visitor and the operator, they can adapt to the system. After the five minutes talk, the visitor naturally look at the Geminoid eyes, and the operator, they can also adapt to the Geminoid system. And when the visitor touch to the Geminoid face, the operator can feel something on his face. It's quite the amazing experience.
So basically, what do you want to study with this Geminoid?
When I developed the female Android, my interest was how we can realize the human likeness with a robot. With the Geminoid, so the question became more philosophical. As I said, actually we can adapt to the Geminoid system, and the operator, it's a kind of a feeling the operator can exist in a distant place, and the visitor, they can feel my authorities, and actually the visitor, they feel my presence. So the boss, the visitor, and the operator, they can adapt to the system, and then our question is what is the human presence? Okay, if we use the Geminoid system, so I can exist in a distant place, and in a distant place, the visitor feel my authority, my presence there. So the question is what is the human presence? What is the authorities? And so that is a very interesting question. That is very philosophical, and so far we couldn't have any method to study about that kind of the philosophical question. But I think by using a Geminoid, so we can study that kind of philosophical questions.
Do you think we'll ever achieve a robot which has a human presence but which is not teleoperated, which is completely autonomous?
It depends on the situation and the purpose. Okay, and for the simple, the iterative service, so we can have autonomous robot. If we expect a more complicated communication service, we need to have a teleoperated system. Even if the robot is teleoperated, we can find some practical use, practical application of the robot. Well, for example, if one operator can control the 10 robots, that will be very practical. Of course, the robots need to have the automated function too. So we are going to choose an autonomous robot or the hybrid robot, according to the situation and purpose.
Let's look a bit into business. Is there a market for these androids or the Geminoid?
My purpose is not to develop a commercial product, and my interest is study about what is the humans by building a robot. But we are finding many important factors for the human-robot interactions. And that kind of knowledge can be used for developing a commercial product, commercial robot. So I don't think, Android will be a good commercial product because it's quite expensive and too complicated. But the knowledge from the studies with androids that can be used for developing commercial robots.
Okay. Thanks, Hiroshi, for being here with us on Robots.
These androids sound great. I wish I can get an android of myself to sit in on meetings and go see the in-laws for me. What do you think? Will androids ever be indistinguishable enough from humans? We're holding a poll this week to find out just that, so make sure to vote on our forum and tell us what you would do with your own personal android.
And now the moment you've all been waiting for, the wrap-up of Jack Graham's science fiction story, The Selkies. For those who missed the rest of the story, we'll be posting the entire thing on our website, so that you can hear it in one shot. And don't forget to read up on Jack's other sci-fi stories on lonesomerobot.com. Christine, back to you.
Sylvia's voice broke the quiet, whose only sound had been the hum of deep water in his respirator. Where did you get the name Selkies for your robots? Mangan looked up toward her. Her voice was surprisingly deep for a small woman, every word like an exhalation. He said, "They're seals folk from Irish legend. But my Selkies aren't much like their namesake." "Why? What are they like?" Sylvia asked. They were diving deeper toward a shark cage Mangan had lowered off the side of the boat. It was late afternoon, earlier than he normally dove, and the sea lion Cato was absent. "Beautiful, playful," Mangan said. "The Selkie lads would walk ashore in human guise, take women as their lovers, then go back to the waves." She chuckled. "No different from most men." "Were there Selkie women?" Sylvia asked. "That's another tale. Shark should be coming. Best get in the cage." He opened the door and gestured her to get inside. "You know they don't always show up." "I put buoys with dangling baskets of chum in about a half-kilometer circle around us. They'll come." Her eyes showed alarm behind the goggles. "That's crazy. You could start a frenzy." "Never let it be said I don't know how to show a girl a good time," he said, as she hurried inside. "It'll be a good test." They waited, watching the Selkies pursue and swallow six-pack rings, drinking straws and plastic dinosaurs. There was a new cohesion in their swimming, the result of Mangan's schooling algorithm. After about 40 minutes, Sylvia said, "I think we have one." A large, bullet-headed shape was slowly approaching, circling the Selkies. "Look at the size! And I let Cato swim about with those on the loose?" "Hush," Sylvia said. "I'm about to decide whether you're a genius or a moron." Suddenly, a shark was rushing one of the Selkies, moving too fast to track with the eye. The Selkies scattered, darting to and fro. The shark slowed, picked a new target, and rushed again. But once again, the seemingly random darting of the bots evaded it. "All right," Sylvia said. "So far..." Her breath caught. The shark had caught a Selkie in its great mouth. It shook it once, twice, then released it and began circling its prey. The Selkie immediately swam off and rejoined the school, which was moving as a group away from the shark. The shark rushed and bit again, catching one of the tail section, but again it simply swam off. Eventually, the shark gave up and left. "Ha!" Mangan said. "What just happened?" "I read up on your sharks. Didn't want to leave my daft swarming algorithm as the last line of defense, so I hardened their hulls and tail flippers. Turns out, tiger sharks like to bite, then circle, and watch their prey bleed to death before they go for the kill. The first few that were attacked probably got damaged on the first or second bite, then swallowed. But a shark could bite at this model all day and never damage it enough to catch and swallow it. Happy now? Quite. Back on deck, she said, "You never told me about the Selkie women." Ashore, they'd leave their skins, he said, and walk about as gorgeous women. A man who found and kept one skin could take her to wife, but if she got it back, she'd return to the sea. "Bit like if I nicked your dry suit." She gave an exasperated sigh and began lowering her kayak into the water. "Never give up, do you?" He shrugged. It was just him on the boat now. He'd left Cato in Hawaii after learning of the sharks. He watched Silvio Ochoa paddle away, then turned his attention to the Selkies. They'd surfaced and were circling their islet, adding more plastic. The schooling algorithm imparted a new order to their movements. They no longer looked programmed, but like animals. Though he'd never intended it, they appeared to be, at last, of the sea.
Excellent, and that's it for today's episode of Robots. For more information on today's guests and for the poll, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com. Our next show will air in 2 weeks, but in the meantime, stay in touch through our forum for the latest news and hot topics in robotics.
Thanks for listening. Hope to see you in 2 weeks.
Look Human with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.